every month or so. Like the idea of touching base with our chief pot stirrer, with our agitator in chief. He's the former Suns chairman, Tony Cochran. Tony, great to see you again.
Hey, Jared, how are you?
How are you enjoying the season?
Reasonably well until Sunday night.
Yes.
And Sunday night I was taken to the emergency ward. I had a major relapse, a bit like the team.
Yes, frustrated and disappointed, a bit like the Dogs.
Yeah, no, I think it was a very frustrating night because, you know, being honest, we didn't really even show up. And I, like a lot of people, thought it was going to be a red-hot game. I necessarily wasn't convinced we could beat them at home, particularly when they were down and out as much as they were. But, yeah, I think it was just, you know, it was just a very frustrating game to sit and watch.
Big picture. Policy, AFL manoeuvres. So let's start with Tasmania and a really significant announcement yesterday. The opposition has changed its position, bipartisan support now for Tasmania's stadium.
Well, he has.
He's going to support a stadium. We lost the election, and so the Labor Party needs to change, and we need to change positions on this. We understand that Tasmania's economy is only as big as its next big project. And whilst there are projects happening at the moment, like the one behind us, we need to make sure we've got a very big construction pipeline going forward, and that's why we're supporting a stadium.
Dean Winter, the opposition leader there, Tony. So how significant a moment is this?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, it's clearly significant because they were offside and now they're onside. But I noticed very cleverly in his caveat, you've always got to watch with politicians, I find. Jared, they always have caveats. And he had a cracker yesterday. He said that the opposition would only support the government on the basis the government put in no more than $375 million towards the stadium. I happen to know a bit about building and maintaining stadia. And having been involved indirectly in it for most of my working career. And I just think that total budget for that development in Tasmania, particularly given its very demanding location on the water's edge, et cetera, I don't know how they're going to build a roof stadium for that amount of money. But, I mean, maybe they're going to set a brand new world trend and create something that everybody else has failed to create, but their stadium budget for mine is way off.
How high do you think it would reach?
I just cannot see a stadium of 23,000 in that particular location with a bunch of real building issues attached to it. And the fact that it's going to be fully roofed, I'll be very, very surprised if they can get out of that for anything around 1.3 to 1.5 billion.
So it will pass Parliament now, and then I guess once they start to build it, that's where your cost overruns come in. Will it be, once you start, you're going to finish, aren't you?
Well, no. What actually the opposition in the previous government reign put into place was that the government have to go through an independent planning procedure put together by state bureaucrats, and they have to prove up that it can be built for this budget before they get it final approval in the parliament. So my gut feeling tells me that that's probably still got 12 months to play out before we really understand, is this real or not?
Do you feel like the Devils will come to fruition?
Funnily enough, I do, but I think this is a bit like a very interesting novel. I think there's going to be a couple of more big twists and turns before we get to the final page of the book. I think there's a lot more that could potentially be played out here over the next, say, 3 to 5 years.
Okay, so run your mind to 2029. Is there a Friday night where Tasmania's new team runs out in a 23,000-seat stadium with a roof at Hobart to play its first game in the razzle-dazzle new home?
I think a lot of people with their hearts would dearly love to see that. However, a lot of people with their heads would know that is an incredibly challenging statement you just made. And it will be very, very interesting to see what unwinds. And one of the things that I have advocated from day one. And one of the difficulties you always have in Tasmania is the incredible north-south divide and whether you can genuinely get all of them on board, which will force the political will to make it happen.
Yeah, so that they feel like they have resolved that on the island, Tony, to force that through.
Yeah, I'm just fence sitting on that a bit at the moment. I'm not so convinced.
Eddie Maguire said on his podcast over the past couple of weeks that there are presidents who don't want 19 teams. It's felt a little bit of trolling of North Melbourne. Did you ever sit in meetings with presidents where they wanted North Melbourne out?
I can't say that I can ever remember a discussion specifically talking about we want North Melbourne out, but I certainly did sit in on many discussions where there is a very strong feeling amongst former presidents and current presidents included that they don't believe the competition could sustain more than 18 sides. Which I support, by the way. So I'll put my hand up. So I think somebody that I could name somebody who says that we don't know what 19 sides. Well, I was a president for 7 years. I don't want 19 sides because I don't believe we can make it work. You can only make it work if you're prepared to have two or three teams every year at the bottom who are really totally mediocrity. So there's just not, we need to rapidly change, which builds into other causes and comments that you and I have discussed over the time, Jared, that we don't have the depth of players. And so that would need to be radically fixed before I believe you could yet again add another side, unless everybody in the system's prepared to see two or three times sides sit permanently at the bottom and struggle to get. I mean, in that regard, North Melbourne is a moving target at the moment because I'm absolutely glued to the bottom and struggling on every front.
So if this is truly the national game and the biggest code in the country, we ought to be able to prepare 800 players from Australia's population to play the game, shouldn't we?
Absolutely, we should. And a good example that's very frustrating at the moment is you've got some Melbourne current presidents absolutely agitating to shut down the Northern Academies. Why? Because after a number of years and much money and much heartache and effort by a vast group of people, we finally have most of the Northern Academies now really functioning well, to the point that I guess the tipping point was this year when the Suns landed four top picks from their academy. I'm kind of a weird person. I think everybody would probably agree on that. And what I would be doing is rather than tearing down success, which is what the Northern Academies have turned our great game into, I would be saying, right, it's a great model. How can we roll that out throughout Australia? How can we get over to the West and create, maybe it's only one academy over there and, you know, on some basis of where they finish each year, they get the first pick out of it. Same in South Australia, the same in Victoria. Victoria probably could host three or four academies, maybe five even, I don't know. I would be looking very carefully at the model the Suns have created, the success of that model, and I would be saying, right, we need a stronger pipeline of young players coming to our game. Gone are the days when the good old school system used to work a treat. Because what you've got now is you've got somebody coming out through the Suns or the Giants Academy who has had 6 years of real intense AFL schooling and training, all the things that go behind that, the medical, the sciences, the correct diet, everything else, versus some kid who's come through some school system down south. Some of whom are very, very obviously talented and great players, don't get me wrong. But I would try and expand that. I would try and make that bigger. I think it's got, you know, if you follow the American system and NFL, which they use the college system, it's incredibly extensive. But only 1% roughly of those players actually make it to NFL. So in other words, they've built a huge pipeline And then, of course, from a huge pipeline, you're going to get a lot of quality. We haven't built the huge pipeline. We've built a huge pipeline of people playing the game, which is awesome, and we need that community level. I'm not taking away from that at all. But we also need a huge pipeline that's dedicated with the thought process that these people, whether they be male or female, these people need to get into a system that will give them the best chance of playing at the elite level.
Whose responsibility is that to run nationwide academies?
Well, it's the AFL's to set it up. I mean, we're a centralised game run out of AFL House in Melbourne. And, you know, I'm a big supporter of that. They do a tremendous job overall. They are the ones who are going to have to examine this, study it. And, you know, Jared, it's not hard to find a lot of very good quality ex-players who could head up these academies and run them. I mean, Reece Shaw heads up the Gold Coast Suns Academy, does a superb job. You know, we've built those academies in non-heartland football territory. So I would imagine it's considerably easier to build serious academies across the country in what is clearly great heartland AFL territory, the southern states in particular.
So the report you saw around Western Australia that there might not be one kid coming through in this draft who is high end, is that sort of the warning sign for you that action is needed?
It would be a disaster if it was true. I don't know whether it's true or not, but what concerns me the most about that is that we're even talking about it, because if you're talking about it, it means there's some skerrick of truth to it. West Australia, a great football state, and that is yet another example. I can cite lots of examples in the last 10 years where I have had this as a concern, and that is yet another glowing concern. I mean, I think it was 4 years ago, Queensland as a state produced more draftees than South Australia. Well, that's just quite extraordinary when you think about it. I mean, football's really only been mainstream up here for the last 20 years. It's been played in South Australia for 150 years. So there are a number of signs, and none of them are great signs, in my humble opinion. I think it really needs... It needs the AFL to set up a working group to at least examine it. It's not the craziest idea under the sun from the bald-headed idiot in Queensland. And, you know, perhaps it's the sort of thing that the AFL should look up and set up a working committee to see, you know, how do you make it happen? Is it justifiable? Do we need it? Is there a better way? Because I don't think our great game can continue on in the manner that it's working to at the moment.
Tony Cochran.
Yep. You've got another team.
Yes, so you're going to need 42 more. Tony Cochran is with me. He's our agitator-in-chief on some of the big issues for the code at the moment. Up next, we'll talk the illicit drugs policy and whether the idea of a fairer fixture was ever discussed in his time sitting in these meetings. This is, Melbourne's weather today is mostly sunny, a top of 17. Message from United Energy, be prepared for extreme weather. Sign up for SMS outage alerts at unitedenergy.com.au/notify. Tony Cochran is with me on the program, former Suns chairman. Some of the big issues facing the game with his war stories and experiences and his opinions, which he's not shy in offering us. Tony, you are a believer, keep politics out of sport. Across the previous rounds, the AFL industry enacted a stance around domestic violence, gender-based violence. Did you think that was effective?
You are correct that I normally want to disassociate politics from sport completely because I think it's a disaster to couple the two together. However, I have to admire Andrew Dillon and his team for what they did on the weekend with regards to the domestic violence stance. Regrettably, it's one of those issues that I think sport can take a lead in. Sport can try and explain to the greater population that this is just completely and utterly unacceptable, and that it just has to stop. I almost can't fathom it. I never have been able to, how it's so out of control in this country, but it is, and we've got to own it. Every one of us have to own it, and we have to collectively do everything we can to stamp it out, call it out when we see it. And so in that regard, I think the AFL team did a great job on the weekend, just forcing us all to reflect for a moment and think about what sort of an issue this is in our society today. And they absolutely won me over with that on the weekend. I thought it was very well handled. I thought it was a great initiative. I believe Don Pike from the Eagles put it up. The AFL clearly ran with it, as did every club, every coach. Look, if it just, Jared, if it just saves one life, it was totally worth it.
Does it lift the responsibility of the industry, of the code, when it's confronted with an issue in its own backyard? So this immediately got laid onto the Tarryn Thomas scenario, and then Wayne Carey became enmeshed in that with the Hall of Fame inductions in New South Wales. What comes after the gesture?
Well, you can't make a gesture if you're not going to live it. It's just, I'm sorry, it's hollow and it's weak. If you're going to lecture people about their behaviour and then you're not going to clean up what I call your own camp, then I'm sorry, you're just a fake. So, it's bad luck for those couple of gentlemen that you mentioned, but clearly they were on the wrong side of that debate at some stage in their life, and they need to think seriously about what they did and how they did it. And it's unacceptable. I don't care who you are. I couldn't care if you're the Prime Minister. I couldn't care if you're living in a hovel in, my backyard. The reality is that it's unacceptable behaviour, and we as an industry can't excuse it because you happen to be a good AFL player. I'm sorry. That's just not an excuse any more than you're a good radio announcer or you're a good, jockey or you're a good mountain climber. This is unacceptable behaviour, full stop. There are no exceptions.
The illicit drugs code is under review. This has always been the source of tension and consternation since it was brought in the first time. Did you ever have fears, Tony, that the policy made the code look indulgent and the cover-up of drug use?
Yeah, this is a really difficult subject for me, Jared, only in the sense that I can absolutely see both sides of this argument. So it's firstly, it's not easy. Firstly, we have to recognise that, regrettably, again, drugs are part of, they're institutionalised virtually in our society of today and throughout the world. It's not unique to Australia. And it's a really, really difficult one. And a lot of people lose sight of things here. For example, you often hear comments about, the club should have reported it to the parents. Well, unfortunately, under Australian law, once you turn 18 or even younger in many circumstances, the club has no right to report things about their son or daughter to the parents. Those rights are gone. It is a very difficult line to walk. I can truly tell you that when this was all first brought up by the Melbourne doctor, courtesy of his mate in the federal parliament, I really can say in my whole time as president at the Suns, this issue never came up. Dr. Barry Rigby, who's been, to the best of my knowledge, I think he's been our head medico from day one. I think he's the only head doctor we've had the whole existence of the Suns. He is a man of such quality and such decency. There is no way, I just know this without even asking him, there's no way on God's earth that you could get Barry Rigby to lie and say, Tony Cochran pulled a hamstring, when in actual fact, Tony Cochran was smashed on some form of drug and they were worried that Tony Cochran on the weekend was going to be tested and be shot to pieces. I don't think, some of the comments that have been made by members of the media throwing mud Just completely unfair. I think, you know, some of the percentages I've talked about AFL players that are taking drugs, I don't accept. I can certainly tell you that whilst I was in the chair every year, the head doctor comes and go, I can only talk about our experience. I haven't been in this experience in any other club. Our head doctor came and gave us a full report on the results from the hair testing, which, as you probably know, Jerry, but your listeners may not know, if you take a sample of someone's hair from anywhere on their body and you test it within the previous 3 months, you can pretty much tell whatever drugs they've taken, such as our sciences of today. And in the time I was in the chair and Barry sat there and gave us a read of how that testing had gone from the previous year, it was incredibly low. I mean, it was, you know, you're talking a big group of players, 45 to 50 players being tested 3 or 4 times during the year. And it was, the results were, you know, if not zero, they were so close to zero, it wasn't funny. So I think over my, and I've dealt with a lot of AFL players, and my personal opinion is out of the 800 odd, yes, there's probably some that are doing recreational drugs, but the vast, vast, vast majority are really mindful of their role in society. They're really mindful of their role at the club, and they are really responsible towards each other and towards the fact that they know they've got a lot of young people looking at them and taking attention of what they do and say. So I think it was, I think some of the judgment that's come out aimed at the players here has been really poor, really poor. And I don't think it's been a fair criteria of the vast majority of AFL players who do the right thing.
Does the club administrators still get that same level of detail that you were getting, Tony? There was a tightening along the way where I'm not 100% sure whether that flow of information that you used to get still goes through now.
Well, you don't get very much information.
Yep.
Most of the information is totally contained to the head doctor. The head doctor is under the AFL system. He has currency, for want of a better word, of who does what, how, when, and why. My great colleague, that great Victorian Geoffrey Kennett, has got a very strong opinion on this. He's written some very, very good words on it. And I can see his side. He believes change needs to come about. This is truly, I mean, it's bizarre because I truly can see both sides of the argument. Yep. Here. I'm really caught in the middle. Does it need change? Yes, maybe it does. But it needs very careful change if it's going to be changed, because we're talking about things here that have massive impacts on people's lives. I would just like, you know, some of the smarties on the side, like Dick Pound was quoted. I mean, come on, Dick Pound, are you the same Dick Pound in the IOC who oversaw all the Russian and Chinese cheating of drugs and everything? I mean, you know, can we just get back to a few people perhaps giving opinions on it who do stand in a fairly solid place to comment about it and get away from some of the ridiculous comments that have been thrown unfairly at some of the AFL fraternity.
Tony, it's great to pick your brain on the big issues. We've got more. We'll roll them over to next month when we touch base again. Good man.
All the best, Jared. All the best to your listeners.
Tony Cochran there. Across the season, he's going to be our chief pot stirrer, our agitator in chief on the big issues of policy and the like around the AFL and its clubs.